Today on the breakdown, there are only 10 left. 10 and then we're done. We're out. 10 players left in the main event of the World Series of Poker in 2023. That's the hand we're going to do today. And Juan Maceras and Adam Walton are going to lock horns in a surprising, fascinating, weird, bad hand, which a lot of chips are going to go one of the players' ways. Not a little bit of chips, a lot of chips. And let's remember, this is the final table bubble for the main event, the World Series of Poker. So keep your freaking hat on because it might get blown off. It just might blow your hair back a little bit is what I'm trying to say. This hand and this situation. I need you to buckle down and chime in right now on the breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
I can't wait till we're doing video podcasts.
Why?
So
why?
People could, like, some things just happen sometimes that are odd and hard to explain, but Jonathan often does the little bit where he waits a long time before saying our names, but this time, for some reason, he looked like the girl from The Omen or something.
Yeah.
Where he's, like, trying to look evil, and there's
stared at you.
No real reason for it. He just did it. He's doing it now.
Yeah. I'm mean mugging you.
And if we had video podcasts, which someday is possible.
Oh, yeah? Is that still in play?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just asking.
It's still in play.
All right.
But, yeah. So now that's the life that we're all living, knowing that Jonathan is looking at people like that.
We're going to need a really good, like, shot just of my face, though. I need, like, a camera dedicated just to me and mine, you know?
Yeah, we'll get a Jonathan cam.
John cam. J-cam. Yeah. J-cam.
We'll make it pretty low res, you know, for your benefit.
That is obvious and mean.
Yeah. So it is those things.
You shouldn't be mean and you shouldn't be obvious, Grant. Those are the two evils that
I don't know.
Be.
What about, like, The Undertaker, the wrestler? He's kind of mean and obvious.
How is he mean?
He's always throwing people and punching them and stuff, and he's like, I'm from the grave area.
That's the culture, though.
I like graves, you know?
If you have a family member who dies, I will be the one who, I will dig the grave and take care of the whole situation.
Yeah, I'm quite compassionate. Yes.
here's a list of our fees, and I know they're pricey, but we do recommend the cedar coffin.
It's, yes.
It's cost more, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
It has a lot of...
More comfortable.
A lot of perks. they get you at those mortuaries, yeah. Man.
Birth, death, and marriage, they really...
Oh, birth, do they get you?
Yeah.
I thought they didn't.
Maybe not birth, but like
stuff
for kids.
Oh, yeah.
But that less so than marriage and death. That marriage and death are really the industries where they capitalize real hard on the situation and you wanting the situation to either be over or go really well, and they charge you way more than
right. You
need to be charged.
Birth, you're already sort of like, we're not going to have any money ever because of this little thing.
Yeah.
Right? So you're a little more sensitive maybe to like getting crushed compared to marriage where you're like, fine, I don't want to get yelled at again. And
and
death where, it's like...
It's like, just get me through this, whatever. I'll sign the thing. Yeah.
And like, oh. I've been in the room when I've watched... I don't know if they're... Is that the Undertaker who runs the mortuary? Is that correct?
That's the mortician, I think.
Oh, I thought the mortician actually worked on the body. I don't know. Whatever. The person who worked there...
Yeah.
Like, took the husband of the woman who had just died, like, 3 days before, into the back. I sat with both of them and watched that person try and upsell them on stuff. And it was,
yeesh,
like, so rough. It was horrible.
Yeah, that is rough.
Horrible. So, don't... I mean, I guess that's your job, but can't you find a better job than that? Can't you do something else that isn't that?
It's rough to
do something else.
Selling it during death. Yeah, it's tough. That's what this hand's about.
Adam Walton, notable Undertaker.
Right.
Obviously, that's what he does for a living, and that's okay, but don't do it.
Now, which industry do you think, from your perspective, Jonathan Levy, who has never died or been married, which industry's practices are more repulsive to you?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the answer's got to be mortician services.
Because they're preying on grief rather than trying to make your moment nice or whatever it is.
Yes. And also it's much more about like, I'm going to get someone who's vulnerable and alone often, or like a group of people who are very vulnerable right now and are confused and maybe out of their minds. Like marriages are planned over the course of a year. There's a whole culture around it. I acknowledge this, but like a lot of people spend a lot of money, but really are getting what they want, you know?
Yes. And
I don't know how often that really happens within the Undertaker game.
Right.
You know, it's like, I got the nicer coffin. I spent an extra $3,000. Was that a good choice? Like, do you feel good about that?
Yeah.
Couldn't that $3,000 have gone anywhere else and be better used?
Right. A charity in the name of that person or something.
Maybe just some nice bubble tea for yourself. I mean,
some bubble tea.
Sure. $3,000 worth of bubble tea. That's a lot of years worth of bubble tea. Yeah. It's like, well, it's at least what?
For you, it's like 6 months.
But for most people, it's like 2 years worth of bubble tea or something, right?
That averages out to with my numbers, two years for a person. Yeah.
You got that?
Yeah.
I got that right.
Based on my spreadsheets. Yeah.
And like, that's a much nicer thing. What I would say is that, you know, he/she would have wanted that money to go towards the bubble tea
for
2 years. 2 years of bubble tea.
Here's the upshot here.
Hit me.
If you, I'm talking to the listener.
Yeah.
If you have a relative or friend or somebody close to you that dies and you're getting upsold on by the mortician, instead, you buy the base level stuff and send us whatever the money is that's extra.
Send us half the money.
Yeah,
that's
fine. Yeah.
That's fine. And we'll handle it. We'll call the mortician and bitch them out and tell them they suck. You don't have to do any of that. We'll take the emotional load from you.
Yep.
Carry that.
We found a new sleazy job.
I mean, we're doing God's work, I would say. How is that sleazy? We're protecting people from the sleaze. They're spending half as much money as they would spend on the surplus, stuff that they don't need. And we're still making sure the morticians are getting balled out for it. Balled out? Is
balled
that the right
out.
Word?
Balled
Yell
out.
Yell that.
Getting balled out.
Scolded. Balled out.
Balled out.
I balled them out. Isn't that something people say? Like in Australia or Austria?
One of those two. It's definitely Australia or Austria.
I mean, it's probably been said in Australia and Austria.
I'm sure it's been said. Yeah.
Ball them out. Maybe not. Not in that context.
Yeah.
He really balled me out. If someone says that, I don't think of yelling, right?
Sales in general is just rough. But, you know, certain ones are worse than others.
I mean, you can have products that you believe in that you're selling, and then it's not so bad, right?
Yeah, that would be nice.
I've had that.
I have not.
It's great. I sold really expensive things to people, but I really believed in the product, and it was great. I really enjoyed it.
I sold medium expensive things, and I didn't really believe in the product, and I was instructed to effectively lie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's really different. Having said even what I said, though, about, like, feeling good about it, there's... Maybe this isn't true for all things, but for me anyway, and I think this is true at least almost always, there's a part in some number of the sales conversations you're going to have where someone asks a question and you're like, well, it's not exactly what you're hoping for here, but I'm going to paper over that in some way.
You know,
I'm not going to be as explicit as I could be, and that sort of sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that part sucks.
And the nice thing, there is a really nice thing about really believing in what you're...
Yeah.
Selling, and we as the poker guys don't really sell things, but we've been in positions where people may want to like give us something, maybe it's money or whatever that's beneficial to us, and we have the opportunity to kind of lie sometimes.
Do you mean like a sponsor? Wants
sponsor,
to
yeah, okay. or whatever,
some advertising stuff.
Yeah, or an investor or whatever.
Yeah,
like I'm actually dealing with this right now, sort of. Mm. I'm not gonna get into details,
I know what you're saying, yeah,
But like I feel so comfortable with what we do as the Poker Guys and being honest about all of the potential outcomes for anything that anybody might want to do with us that I just tell the complete truth, and it feels so much better than like being a salesperson under some company or someone else where you have this agenda. And if we're just selling what we do and what we have, it's like, so I'm telling this investor like, yeah, there's like a bunch of forking outcomes here, and one of them is that it lands with a thud and nothing good happens. Like, I said that, you know, like, and that's just true.
We had a an advertising agency reach out to us like 2 months ago.
Yeah,
and they wanted us to be in a focus group with other influencers to talk about banking as an influencer.
We're
like, okay, and we don't really like our bank, use our bank ever. We get paid in crypto a lot. We didn't really think we made sense for this, but you know, we did the hour focus group and we were just super honest, and there were three stages to this. That was stage one, and they pay you for all these stages. And so if they liked you and thought there was, you know, useful stuff they could get for their banking stuff, they would, you know, escalate you to stage two. And if you did well in stage two, on to stage three. So after we finished stage one, we looked at each other and said, well, obviously we're never going to do any more. But that was kind of fun. But
yeah.
Clearly they would never be interested in us.
Because we just weren't the right people.
I mean, I was like, yeah, we don't really use banks much. We mostly get paid in Bitcoin. You know, it doesn't really, you know. But
and there
actually,
were other people in the focus group, yeah. One in particular who was like perfect. Like
perfect.
She had five banks. She was a super like hustler who worked super hard. We are not that.
She was smart and friendly. But they really liked us. And we ended up doing all three and getting paid for all three. And it was fun and cool. And we're like, okay, we don't know why you like us, but we're just going to keep telling the truth. And we're not going to try and get the thing. We're just going to tell the truth.
Well, it'll probably never see the light of day, but an ad agency from New York actually flew to Portland to film us in our natural environment. That was stage three.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's not. It wasn't for public consumption anyway. It's just for a private book they're going to show to the bank. But still, that was weird. But the point I was getting to is this. I think it's not really about your situation most of the time. Maybe if you're in a desperate situation, it's mostly just about who you are, like what your character is, and if you're the type of person who's going to do that or not. You know, like, am I going to like tell half truths and untruths so I can make a little bit more money here and there? Because there's that opportunity I think has existed for me many times and probably for most people. Or am I going to be more honest and feel sort of enjoy life more as a result, I believe, because I think when you lie, you enjoy life less for the most part. And then you get what you get from it. And like, I'm not saying I've always been in this camp. I think I've been in both camps in my life, but like, I'm pretty squarely in this camp right now, and it's way better.
Of course it's better. And actually, my previous sales job that I was referring to, which was like right out of college, and I think you'll have an opinion on this, but as to why it went this way, but it's pretty interesting. So it was a contracted out company that we sold Comcast door-to-door. So we would go to people who had Comcast or didn't have Comcast, try to sell them more services if they had Comcast, if they have TV, get them to get internet and phone, etc. And we would wear orange vests, as if we were technicians, but we were just salespeople, right? So that's supposed to add to our credibility or whatever. And what we were trained to do was to say, we've been working on the lines in your neighborhood. They've been upgraded. So now's a great time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And like have this whole spiel and like sometimes kind of make it seem like the numbers were a little bit better than they could be and all this stuff. And that's what I did at first. I did the whole spiel. I did the I'm working on the lines thing, whatever. And then I started training under this one guy who was the best sales guy at the whole place. And I had trained under like three other people and they all did the same spiel. They all had the very salesy vibe to them and they did okay. But this guy was crushing it. Like, and I went with him in the first house. I was shocked because he was just entirely honest. He's like, hey, I'm here to sell you some Comcast. And then he just told them everything just legit, like 100% straight up, didn't lie at all.
Yeah.
Which is not what the company wanted him to do, but he was their best salesman.
Yeah.
So I started doing that, and my sales went up like fourfold.
Yeah.
Which it could be the honesty, but it could just be that I was more comfortable and people just trusted me more because of how I was, my demeanor, you know? What do you think?
You know, this is answering the question in a bit of a roundabout way, but they can tell what doctors are more likely to get malpractice suits against them by doing an audio recording of them talking to patients and then distorting that recording so you cannot hear any of the words. They can still tell just from that who is much more likely to get malpractice suits against them and not. And this has been like a big study.
Just the way they talk?
Yes. Like it's almost entirely about the vibe / comfort / whatever that you put off and if people like you or not. It's almost all of this is like, do I want to spend time in an elevator with you or not? You know?
Yeah.
And so when you're doing salesy stuff, you come off a little slick and a little, you know, like agenda-y and you're trying to get things and people sense that and don't like it for the most part.
Yeah.
And if you're straight, then if there's any chance at all they're going to buy because they do want to spend time with you and you feel like real and that's just how it is. So people don't sue their doctors, even when doctors make big mistakes, if they like them. And if they don't like them, they sue them even when they make small mistakes because that's how it goes.
Yeah.
So I think that's the answer.
Yeah. I mean, it had two effects. I started doing better and also I enjoyed the job more because I wasn't like nervous about lying and feeling weird about it.
Yeah. I remember being in a meeting like 2 or 3 years ago in Philadelphia and it had nothing to do with any of these kinds of things that we talk about, but it was for a a really big potential autism study, like a worldwide 10-year autism study, and they had me in the room for it because I have a background in that, as many of you probably know. And at one point, someone said, Jonathan, we think you should run this whole study, which is like an insanely big job. So they wanted me and this other big doctor to like run it. And they were talking about it, and it would have meant like a lot of money, like a lot. And I raised my hand, I said, are we sure I'm the right person for this? And like when I say a lot, I mean like a lot, you know. But I was like, am I really the right person for this job? Are we sure, guys? Because I didn't really think I was, you know. And they were like, we do think you are. And they felt, in some ways, it made me better for the job.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Right, because they're like, oh, he's not trying to get anything from us. They like that. I didn't do that for that reason. I meant sincerely. I didn't know that I was the best person for the job. And even after they said yes, I wasn't sure. But anyway, it didn't end up happening, so it didn't matter. But people really react to that. I always feel like, anyway, that's the big power move is like, you know, owning weakness in some way or another, or, you know, doing all that stuff. Huge power move, and you feel better, and it's real, and people like you more, and life is better.
Yeah. I mean, not to get into a whole self-help thing, but I've found, and I think there's a particular conversation that you and our friend Rob Brewer and I had a while back that you started feeling this way too, but like poker is a world where there's such a lack of integrity in so many corners, and maybe not even corners, maybe just the middle of the room. But to be able to tell yourself and be truthful to yourself about having integrity in all aspects of poker to the best of your ability feels so much better than trying to get any sort of edge or angle in a way that's not cool.
Yes.
Like always help the fish out if they need help, you know, like never lie about something that could affect the game in a way that affects you positively, you know, just like stuff like that.
Tell someone when you can see their cards right away, tell them, even if you might be able to see them, let them know.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. Yes. You think you've been paid too much in a pot? You say it. And that sounds, I know not everyone's going to do that, but it really is a better way to live. It's like a shockingly better way to live.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
And I've had to do that. I've been like, I don't think I anteed, guys. You know, even dumb things like that where I'm like, I'm pretty sure I didn't ante. And I look, and in the old days, I absolutely would have let that go.
Right.
And I just don't do that anymore. And it's better.
Yeah. Yeah. So integrity in poker. I know a lot of people who play poker have integrity. It's just, you notice it when it's not there, and a lot of people are just trying to seek their marginal edges in ways that are not exactly great.
I mean, a lot of people who play poker do not have integrity.
That is for sure.
More than do. So
I don't know if that's true.
Really?
I think that might be a bit of an availability heuristic. Maybe. Because you don't notice when people do have integrity unless it's like a notable event occurs where integrity is required.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. All right. A higher percentage in poker than in other places. That's different than most.
That is something I certainly agree with.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's get on to the hand, though.
All right.
Speaking of integrity, and Adam Walton, Undertaker extraordinaire.
Yeah. Always trying to sell me gold coffins all the time.
Exactly.
Even when nobody died, he's like, you probably need a gold coffin just in case. I'm like, you know what?
Wouldn't you rather be prepared?
You're such a damn good salesman that I have to say yes.
I really like this guy.
He even tells me, like, I know nobody died.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
exactly.
That's amazing that he admits that.
And he's also like, and the margin on these things are incredible. I make so much money. I'm going to go to Disney World on your dime.
Yeah. After you buy this.
Yeah. Because you bought this.
Yeah.
So I need you to buy this.
Yeah.
Buy this.
Please buy it. I have a gun.
I love that honesty too.
Yeah.
That he has a gun. All right.
Anyway. All right. So we have 10 remaining. It's the unofficial final table of the main event.
Yes.
Which my favorite story about that is a story that you told about, I don't remember which guy it was, but the guy who had the chip lead 10-handed in like 2005 or whatever. And it's when they did the November 9 and he busted somebody who had like 9 blinds or whatever. And the guy said, you don't know what I'm talking about?
No, not yet.
And the guy said it was the biggest mistake he made because he was just scooping up chips because the final table bubble was such a big deal that year because it was November 9.
It may have been Raymer actually who said that. Now I think about it. I know Raymer said that those last few spots up to the final table, he like tripled the stack or something crazy. He was already the chip leader, but like he went into the final table with this monstrous lead because he just pushed people around incessantly. So
right.
It may have been him.
I think it wasn't. Because I think actually at that time there was no November 9 yet. I think they were still just playing.
Oh, you're right. That was pre-November 9. I do remember hearing about this other guy, though, who like called an all-in with kings when they were on some bubble and won the pot. And
it was the final table bubble.
So it's a different thing. Yeah, but he was then upset about calling with kings because of this. He's like, why would I try and get these 8 blinds when I could just, you know, win hundreds essentially over time?
everybody's playing super scared, and I have the chip lead.
It's so easy.
Yeah.
What am I doing?
Yeah. It'd be pretty hard to fold kings, though.
I don't think you can fold. I don't think you should fold kings, but maybe against the, if you have the perfect table, the perfect situation, sometimes maybe you can.
Yeah.
Anyway,
here we are, 10-handed.
Okay.
Adam Walton.
Yes.
He has, let's take a look here, okay? He's got about 95 million at the 1 million big blind.
How many big blinds is that?
I can't do the math on that. We're going to have to get a solver. We didn't do the solver on this one.
Hold on. I have a calculator right here. Boop, boop, beep, boop, boop, boop. It can't do it either.
Okay. It's a lot of blinds.
Yeah.
95 million at 1 million big blind.
Okay, fine. It's 95 blinds. We know.
He makes it 2 million under the gun.
Yeah.
With ace, king of diamonds. That seems okay.
I'm cool. I'm chill.
At this point, Juan Meseres has been the chip leader for a very long time.
Yes.
For maybe all of two tables and maybe even longer. I know he was a chip leader for quite a while.
He was like pushing people around pretty successfully for quite a while there, those last few days. I remember that.
And he's got 114 million. So Walton's probably in second or maybe a close third at the time.
I think he's in second. I can actually look, but I'm almost sure he is indeed in second. And in fact, he is clearly in second. Third place is Weinman with 73 million.
Okay. So these are the two big chip leaders.
Yeah.
Meseres is on the button. This is 10-handed, by the way. So,
right.
So Walton opens 10-handed under the gun. And I'm going to have you explain this to me, Jonathan.
No problem.
Meseres flats the button.
Yeah.
Not the big blind, but the button, unless this write-up is incorrect.
It's not. I'm looking at it.
With ace of clubs, eight of hearts.
Yeah.
Ace, eight off.
No, that's right. That's
hit me up with why?
Well, because the dealer didn't give him two kings. He would love to have two kings. Get that. He got an ace of clubs, eight of hearts. So what's he going to do?
Yeah.
He's got to play that hand. He can't play
of course.
Two kings. That's the famous Sammy Farha explanation as to why he played the crazy hand.
It was
King
7, I think.
That's right, against Phil. Right?
Yeah.
That's right, Phil Hummuthin, high-stakes poker. Okay, so why in the world is Meseres flatting ace-8 off on the button? Let me start by saying this. There's no good answer to this, right? I can come up with a few bad answers, but I can't come up with a good answer, to be clear.
Yeah.
So let me just acknowledge that right now. Here are my bad answers to why he might do this. Number one. He's the chip leader, and he sees everyone is indeed afraid of playing here on this bubble.
Okay.
Right? So he's trying to play a lot of pots, especially, and maybe he's playing all his buttons or almost all his buttons, almost regardless of his cards, because he feels he can just take advantage of people and push people around.
Why not three bet?
Because Walton opened under the gun 10-handed.
That's a good reason not to call at all.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
But that would be the reason not to three bet is like...
Well, okay, between calling and three betting... Doesn't it feel like three betting starts to at least give you a chance to push him around more?
Well, I mean, yes, but also, you know, like Walton can have aces right now or kings or something like that.
Yeah.
Right? But then the board can come out in such a way that he doesn't want to put all his whole stack in.
So Meseres' plan is to get Walton off aces or kings.
I don't know what his plan is. I don't know why he's doing this. I'm just trying to come up with some possible explanation. And all I really have is he's showing that when he's got the button, he's calling with a very wide range because he believes he can use fear against them while we're on this bubble. Maybe into the future, even once we're at the final table.
I would so prefer him to have 8-9 off.
Oh my God, me too.
It would be so much better.
And if you're going to play ace-8, like for sure we should be three betting if it's going to be offsuit, right? Because we have a blocker. Walton might fold some good hand. Walton might fold ace-jack here. In fact, I don't think he has ace-jack off anyway, but ace-jack suited in this spot. There's a guy... with 17 blinds.
Yeah. If you make it 7.5 million over 2 million, you really want to call ace jack out of position against the chip leader?
Is it possible because there's that 17 blind stack, Meseres just feels like he can play all the hands, like on the button, and essentially, like, Walton just doesn't want to play a big pot, and so I can just put pressure on
him. Why not 3-bet then?
Because Walton may have a hand that he can go with. Although, what hands can he really go with when they're this deep?
Aces.
It's aces and maybe kings.
Yeah.
I guess kings. He can go with kings.
And if we get 4-bet, we can fold.
He's
fine.
He's going with kings, to be clear. So that is it. You're right. I agree with you. Let me be very clear. I agree. The only other answer I have, and it's worse than the first one, is these are the two biggest stacks. So there's more implied odds.
Implied odds? Ace eight off?
Well, implied odds to win even if you bluff, but the pot will be bigger because you're deeper.
So the plan is to have to raise to 38 million at some point with ace high.
Or he just check folds. He check folds a better hand. Like right now it's ace king against ace.
Well, that's
ace
not
eight.
Really talking about implied odds if you just check folds.
That's a good point. Well, what if it comes 8-8 king? we might win a big
That's odds. A great point.
Implied odds, motherfucker. No, I said it's worse than the first answer, which was also bad. I can't explain why he's doing this. I don't know why he would do this. This seems like a huge mistake. Walton opening 10-handed under the gun with a 17-blind stack around and you on the button with your biggest stack, he's going to have a hand. He's always going to have a really good hand.
Just fold the hand, man. You don't have to bully every spot.
Right. Or if you're going to bully every spot, this is clearly a 3-bet.
Yeah.
Like, let's find out where we are. I mean, by the way, what's going to happen? Walton's not going to 4-bet this hand, I don't think, unless we've been 3-betting all the damn time.
Right.
With a 17-blind stack, he's probably just going to call. And then we can often win on the flop.
Yeah.
That's...
seems like a much better plan.
A really good plan. Anyway, yeah. I agree with you. 9-8 off, 7-8 off, 10-8 off, way better.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'd prefer to be suited. We can call wide on the button in this spot, but this is the wrong hand to do it with.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Anyway, I forgot. This hand was suggested by Phineas Dickman.
Not Dickus Finneman?
It's Phineas Dickman.
Dickus Feynman.
That's a different person. They sell Comcast door-to-door. This is Phineas Dickman.
Oh, he's the Undertaker. Or no, dentist. Dentist.
Yep.
Can't trust them either.
No, depends on the dentist. Some of them are all right.
I know, but...
Phineas Dickman.
Yes.
Discord.
Good name.
Use the link
we
to sign up.
We joke because we love.
He chose the name.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, like Maceras calls and the blinds both fold, and who knows why Maceras called.
Let's at least take 20 seconds and talk about Aguilera's fold in the big blind.
Okay, what did he have in the big blind?
He has queen, four of hearts, and he's getting...
And he has 17 blinds?
Well, now he has 15.2 back because he's already got a million in there, and he's got his ante out.
And it's a min open?
It's a six. He's getting 6.5-1 to close the action with queen, four of hearts, but he's only got 15.2 million in front of him.
I think I like folding.
I think I probably do, too. It's hard to realize, like, flopping a flush, are we just going with it against the under-the-guns range? They're often not folding.
It's not great.
We're going to need really good things to happen. Yeah, I think we're probably just supposed to fold, especially three ways.
Every blind matters when we're trying to have three-bet shoves to get through in the future, you know? So, like, it gives us more time for that.
It's true. We basically have a whole orbit at 15 blinds, like 14.7 blinds. Like, that's more than enough for fold equity.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so okay. I like the fold.
What blind level would he have to make this a clear call in your mind?
20, I think.
Yeah, 20, 25.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Agreed. Okay.
Anyway, he folds.
Cool.
And there's going to be, I guess, because we're just looking at the write-up.
I mean, I got the video right in front of me, buddy.
Okay, so we're just going to go ahead and add 2.5 million to the... So there's 6.5 million in the pot.
There's 6.5 million in the pot.
Yep. Yeah. All right.
It's a guarantee.
Ace, king of diamonds for Walton. Ace, eight off for Maceras.
Okay.
Nitro betting for everybody else.
They don't get it. No, Adam Walton, you're out.
Yep. Juan Maceras, after that call, no thank you.
We have rejected your application, sir.
Yeah. Although everybody who's listening can use the link in the description of this podcast to sign up for Nitro betting and get access to the Poker Guys monthly tournament, along with all sorts of cool promos.
Yeah, like sports betting promos.
Yeah.
Like NFL betting promos.
Last year,
in
the NFL, we did a survivor pool for just our people, and maybe some other people.
Yeah,
I don't know
some other people too.
But it was a free roll, and first place was $1,000,
and Bitcoin,
and it was just a free roll.
Yep,
and one of our people won.
Indeed.
So that could be you.
And it should be you.
All you got to do is use the link. Do you have to? I'm doing the ad.
That's you. Sorry.
You can finish the ad.
So come on down to Nitro Betting where your hat's in your hand and your chips are on the game. We'll see you down there at Nitro Bet.
Use the link. Okay. All right. 7-5-7 rainbow flop. No diamonds.
Which correct.
Means Walton doesn't have a backdoor flush draw.
This is a terrible flop for Ace King of Diamonds, but we've only put $2 million in.
Yep. I mean, we still have the best hand a lot of the time.
A lot of time we don't.
Yeah, Maceras has a lot of pairs.
Pocket eights just scream.
They scream because of pain.
And Maceras, because these are the two biggest stacks, could have pocket nines, even pocket tens, maybe as high as pocket jacks.
Yeah, I would say so. And he could have a seven or a five, too. He's obviously pretty wide.
Clearly he can have that.
Is it just a check fold for Walton? Is that the plan?
Assuming Maceras bets any kind of reasonable amount, yes.
I think it's
a check fold.
I don't really hate a small bet.
Oh, just because we're going to, like, king, queen, jack, 10
suited. Let's just bet $2 million again and get rid of some equity.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. I got no problem with that.
Like, maybe Maceris is floating with everything, and that makes it less good.
I mean, I would guess since he called with ace eight off, he is floating with everything.
Yeah.
And then we shouldn't bet. I think this is like, we don't have to check fold if we don't want to, but we can't put, like, we can check call once, but we can't put chips in the pot on the turn. So maybe it's just better to get out and wait for a better spot.
Walton does check.
So this, Maceris did it. Congratulations. Grant was wrong. Everyone, Jonathan was wrong. Everyone was wrong.
Maceris checks back.
Why in the world would he check back? Why?
That's a great question.
Why?
I mean, he thinks that Walton has a lot of check raises. Walton has a lot of overpairs that he's checking. I don't know why. I mean, this feels like a great opportunity to just try to use your stack.
Let's say Walton's checking his entire range on 7-7-5, which okay. is possible.
Sure.
Right. Especially against the other big stack. He's pot controlling with the 17 blind stack sitting there, whatever. Or 15 blind stack now. He doesn't just have overpairs if he's checking full range. He's checking full range. Or near full range or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So king, queen, suited, jack, 10, suited.
Ace, king?
Ace, king, ace, queen, ace, jack, ace, 10, suited. Ace, 9, suited. Like, what the fuck, man? By the way, pocket fours,
yeah.
pocket threes, pocket deuces, maybe pocket sixes. Pocket sixes, I assume, are going to call once. But, like, we're doing okay against pocket sixes, by the way. We have some equity, reasonable-ish equity against pocket sixes. Like, I just don't know why in the world we would call this preflop and then check back this flop when we really clearly can have trip sevens here.
Yeah, I agree.
This is insane.
Yeah.
We have gone all the way in. And I don't know if we can find our way out now.
Yeah, I don't like either decision by Maceris so far.
The thing is this. You can dislike the first one or the second one, but they should never go together.
You wouldn't think.
Like, you can have hands that you check here, but then they would be better hands to have called with preflop. Or you can have this hand that you decide to play preflop like this, but then you have to bet this like 100% of the time when he checks, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Or you're going to raise the turn sometime, I guess. It's really play it weird. But you have to take a clear aggressive action with this hand. Anyway, what are we beating here? King, queen suited exactly? King, jack suited exactly? There aren't many combos.
Right, we're not trying to get the showdown with ace eight, are we?
I hope not. The fuck is happening?
Relax.
Okay.
Just chill out.
I'm just putting it on.
There's like six blinds in the pot.
We're all the way in.
There's six blinds in the pot.
When I make a raise, I think on the river or at any point, because we're going to play poker in a tournament tonight, I'm actually going to say that instead of saying I'm all in. I'm like, I'm all the way in.
Yeah.
It's going to be fucking great. If you're at the tail, you're going to love it.
I can't wait.
Yeah. I'm also going to say time a lot as if I need more time.
I can't wait.
It's gonna be great.
Good night. Are you gonna wear a funny outfit? I mean, beyond
maybe.
What your normal clothes are, not just your normal clothes, which are kind of funny.
I'm sad now.
But like, are you gonna wear a different?
I'm officially crying on the inside because you said that to me.
You smiled though. Oh, but it's like one of those classic
it's one of those,
sad people.
It's the
things.
Frowny smile, not the smile frown. The frown smile. I smile, but you can tell I'm hurting.
It's the eyes. You can look in the eyes and be like, "That is a darkness. That is a real darkness."
Yeah.
Well, if you just dressed differently, it'd be fine. You wouldn't have to worry about it. King of spades on the turn. Bing, bing, bing for Adam Walton.
I mean, what a freaking card.
Almost never losing now. Feels pretty good.
It's possible that, you know, Maceris has pocket fives, pocket sevens, or 7-8 and checked back.
Yeah.
But there aren't many combos of those things, and he might just have bet those as well on the flop.
Right. Walton checks again, which...
He's like, here's your rope, buddy.
I think this is a Maceris-based plan. He's like, Maceris has been trying to bully everybody. The king is a card that... Once I check, he's going to think I don't have that, and he's going to be like, oh, I have all the king 10 suiteds and king queen and king jack, and I'm going to get Walton off of deuces or threes or fours or whatever he has.
I mean, depending on some of the situational stuff that's been happening with Walton at the table, I would think when Walton checks this king, it looks like he's got like two jacks, and he had just checked the flop because it's a range-based check, and now the king comes and he feels like, oh, I shouldn't bet that
either. I mean, why not deuces, threes, fours, sixes, eights, nine?
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. That's true. The thing is, the king is a card he might bluff, and so if he has like sixes and down, he might actually... Well, no, he's never going to get a better hand to fold, but he could clean up the equity. With jacks, there's less equity to clean up.
Yeah, but
that's the one thing.
You'd think you'd bet a lot of those hands on the flop anyway.
Yeah, but he might not be maybe actively trying not to play a big pot against a guy who he thinks is going to take shots at him.
Yeah,
you know, where he's like, it plays way better. This hand plays just better as a check call, figure it out spot. You know, against a guy who's going to raise just because he can, and there's a 15 blind stack.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I would feel less inclined to bluff here when the king comes and he checks to me, because now I'm like, that's a bluffing card for him. Why isn't he bluffing that card?
Mm-hmm.
Either he's completely giving up with what that he opened under the gun 10-handed, or he has a reasonable hand that he's planning on calling at least one street, if not two streets with.
So you don't want Maceris to take a shot?
Now I don't. I don't like it. if a king or an ace comes and he checks on really good bluffing cards for him, range-wise, I don't like that at all in this spot. So I think this is the time to check if I'm ever going to check.
Well, Maceris is going to do the opposite. He bets $3 million.
What do you think about my thought process, by the way? Do you agree or no for Maceris?
I don't fully agree.
Okay.
I think Walton's going to just have some give-ups and some hands that are currently beating ace-8 that will fold anyway.
Like ace-10 suited?
Or deuces, threes, fours.
Right.
Sixes.
And just fold. Okay. Yeah.
Like, if he has eights and you check the flop, are you really just going to call on this king and then hope that everything goes well on the river? You might.
I mean, it's going to be pretty inexpensive on this turn. It's going to be $4 million. It's four blinds. You can call with eights. You're going to call with your eights.
I think he's got a lot of better ace highs than us, too, like you said. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's fine to take a stab here.
Okay.
Which Maceris does, bets $3 million. Walton calls.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. The river is the nine of diamonds.
Okay.
6-8 got there. The pot is now $12.5 million.
Seems like Maceris can have 6-8 and we can't as Adam Walton.
Yes, that seems correct. But Maceris did not bet the flop. That makes 6-8 a lot less likely. I mean, it's possible, but you know, you have 8 high and equity against most things.
Feels like Walton has more pocket nines than Maceris.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And it feels like Maceris has more kings than Walton, but Walton knows that he has ace king.
Right. Okay.
So Walton checks the 9.
Okay. He's like, take your shot, swing away. I'll happily pick up any bluffs you have.
Should Maceris swing away now that we're here?
We just got called once. We might be able to get a lot of those pocket pairs which called once on the turn to fold.
Like eights and tens. And
jacks and even queens.
Yeah.
Queens are really not going to like another big bet, right? If we bet big.
Yeah, I think we're trying to rep king, queen, and king, jack. If we bet again, what are we really repping?
What are we repping?
I guess we could have ace king because Walton opened under the gun, 10-handed.
We could. Okay, we could have ace king sometimes. Besides that, yeah, king queen. King queen feels like it would bet here for sure, right? And probably king jack too. King jack suited can bet here. That's probably it, right?
So assuming Walton is a thinking player, how much do you want to bet if you're trying to rep king queen? Saying like, I want to get called by a weaker hand than king queen.
And how much is in the pot?
$12.5 million.
And the only, I guess spades missed as spades came in on the turn as a draw potentially and missed.
I guess, did we ask the question of if Maceris should go for it again once Walton checks the river here?
I think we did. You want to ask it?
Yeah.
I feel like once we bet the turn, we probably should go for it again.
Just repping a big king?
Yeah, like repping king queen.
Yeah.
And try and fold out two tens, basically. Yeah. That's what I'd be attacking here. Two tens have to call the turn, but they don't have to call the river.
Yeah.
And it's not that big a deal if we're wrong anyway. You know what I mean? Like, we have a lot of chips. Like, I'd rather have more chips, obviously, but it's fine. And, you know, I also like the idea of just, like, pushing that guy around a little bit if I can. You know?
I should mention the backdoor spades missed. I don't know if that'll factor into our analysis, but it's there. The king was a spade, and there was a spade on the flop. Yep. So, backdoor spades have missed.
Yep. So, that's, you know,
that's not great.
Because we are the ones who would have spades, right?
Yeah.
Because he check-called the turn. He does not have spades.
Yep.
Without a pair. So I guess he could have ace five of spades exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And maybe we get through on that. We get that one through, but like that's it.
Yeah.
So that's really bad, actually.
Right. Because he can put us on missed spades.
Yes, he can. It looks like we either have king, queen, or missed spades most of the time when we bet, right? There are.
If we have king, jack, are we going to bet the river? Maybe not.
Do we have king, queen off? I guess we do. We have ace, eight off. We have a lot of kings, actually.
Yeah,
probably
but we're
king,
not,
jack off too, and king, ten off.
But are we betting the weak ones?
I don't know. Value? I don't think we're betting king, ten. Are we betting king, jack?
I don't know.
Maybe. We're not betting huge.
Yeah.
So if king, queen, how much are we betting if we have king, queen? We're going to try and get called by two tens. We're betting like, there's 12 million in there, like 7 million? Is that 7.5?
That seems kind of big.
Well, you know, you got to make it look a little bluffy, like maybe I miss my spades kind of a thing. I mean, you don't, obviously.
You could
bet $4 million and just like force him to call.
Yeah.
Two tens, essentially. I think I like betting a little bigger where we could have, that way you can work some more bluffs back into our range because it's just hard to imagine we ever have bluffs at $4
million. Well, Maceris bets $5 million with ace eight.
Okay, so he's more, so I don't like any of his decisions in any
But he's like trying to make it look valuey.
He is.
So
he
I give him credit for that.
Do we, okay. Fair enough. I don't think we have any bluffs, though, which is his point, which is Maceris' point.
He does have bluffs.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty neat.
It is. But I think he does a really good job of convincing Walton that he has king-queen.
because Walden raises.
I mean, this is interesting.
Walden raises to $17 million, and I gotta believe it's because he's putting Maceras on king, queen, or king, jack.
Yep, and then you have to get called by those hands, too, when you raise. Like, not just, you can't just be beating them. You actually have to get called. Because I'm going to say that Maceras can have king nine suited. I'm sure he can now that I look at this, right?
Yeah.
That's a hand that would fit perfectly in this whole story, and maybe bet $5 million to get called by two tens. Like, that's possible, right?
Well, so would king queen.
Right, but is king queen going to call the check raise? I don't know. King nine is.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. I don't know if king queen's calling the check raise. Is this a good check raise?
I don't know. I think you have to look at this a couple ways. Despite whatever Maceras, I'm going to look at it from both players' perspectives, but despite whatever Maceras has done that we don't like so far, he has done a really good job convincing me he has king queen. I know what he has, and I'm kind of putting him on king queen.
Okay. Sure.
And I think if Walden thinks about it that way, he's like, king queen, king jack feel like such likely holdings. He might not know that Maceras has king nine in his range.
Right.
You might think he has like king 10 suited plus. So he's like, I mean, there's a few times where he has a full house or a seven that he slow played, but I got to try to get value out of this king queen.
It's also really hard to put Maceras on nines, right? You figure Maceras bets the flop with nines, yeah, like always,
yeah,
when checked to, like always.
Yeah, that seems like a slam dunk bet.
Yeah.
So I don't really hate the check raise. The question is if you can get called.
I just don't know. I don't know if you can. And of course, anything that is beating us ain't folding, right? No way. Like,
no.
The first hand that's beating us actually is king nine.
Yeah.
That's one pip up. That is definitely not folding those checkers. It may not love it. It's like I'm losing a pocket aces.
Yeah.
I'm losing a pocket nines, quad sevens, but I'm going to call for 12 million more or whatever, right?
Yep. Yep. But I'm just going to say what happens.
Okay.
And this makes me like Walden's play a lot more.
Yes.
And then we're going to try to do our best to, like, seventh grader style, dissect the frog. We're going to dissect the frog.
Okay.
Walden made it $17 million over five, and Maceras tanks and calls with ace eight high.
Can we just let that like be in the room for a minute?
7-5-7 king nine.
Bet, raise, call.
Maceras calls
with ace eight off.
Okay. What are the hands that Walden gets here this way with that ace eight is beating?
Okay, I'm going to try and be as generous as possible because my initial answer is zero.
Jack 10?
Jack 10 of spades? Wait, how did Jack 10 get? Jack 10 check called the turn? It has to be of spades. It's 7, yeah. 5, 7 king. It's only Jack 10 of spades. It's got to be spades.
8, 9? 8, 9 is beating us. Yeah, never mind.
It's got to be spades, and it's got to be spades that check called the turn instead of betting the turn themselves when they have the range advantage and that king is good for them.
And we don't have the ace of spades, so what if it's like ace 10 of spades?
Oh, my God. It feels more likely than ace 5 of spades when there's a 17 blind stack also, yeah, and 10-handed, right? He may not always open that under the gun. Be, yeah, as deep as he may. And actually, he was pretty active, so maybe he just always is. But I don't know that for sure, and this is a very unique spot. Not very unique.
So there's a chance that Walden's bluffing with nut spades and actually has ace eight beat.
Can you imagine if he turns over ace 10?
That'd be amazing.
Because, you know, yeah. I mean, that would be wild. This is... Okay, let's try and come up with a hand. It's got to be... Okay, nut spades are the only hand that he might decide to check call the turn with, right?
But then it has to be a worse nut spades than ace eight.
Right. It's got to be like ace four of spades. Why would he play it that way?
It's not enough. It's not enough.
This is insanity.
We're not worried about 6-8 because Walden opened under the guns.
I have bad news.
Huh.
Let's say he has ace 4 of spades. We're chopping. We don't even win the pot. Our 8 doesn't play.
All right, but the 10 would play.
This is such a disaster. He has to have queen high for this to make any sense at all for us to call. What are we doing? We're going to put in $12 million to win 17?
So we're putting him on queen, jack of spades specifically?
That check called the turn when the king of spades comes.
Yeah.
What in the hell? Okay. I think I like zero of these decisions. The one I liked the most was the bet of $5 million on the river.
Yeah.
That I can get behind. I think I like my sizing up a little bit better, but whatever. This is a reasonable path.
Yeah.
This is I don't know. I mean, I feel like I cut open the frog and it's like there's antler guts in there. Like,
yep.
I don't know what I'm looking at.
Antler guts?
Yeah, it's not what I expected to be there.
I didn't know frog. That was a thing, antler guts.
Oh, antlers don't have guts now? They can't have guts? Oh. Antlers have guts. You have guts, I have guts. Everybody poops, man.
Antler? That's a part of a part of a deer?
Yeah. Part of a deer. And other animals, by the way, not just a deer. Everybody poops. Anyway, you see what I'm saying? You open up the frog and you're like, first of all, antlers. Second of all, guts of an antler, which I didn't know existed.
But I can identify by sight.
Wildly confused by this whole scenario. All right. I don't want to pile on, and I know I get accused of being extra harsh.
Indeed.
But I feel compelled to ask this question.
Okay.
Where does this rank in like the worst plays we've seen that we've done on the
Before breakdown? Answering that question, I want to think a little bit more about
it. Okay, great.
Because like
that's
it's
good.
Possible that I could find merit in it. I don't know if I will.
Okay.
Unblocking spades is good.
Yes.
Although I think I want to have the ace of spades because I don't want him to have ace 10 or ace jack or ace queen of spades and I just lose to the bluff anyway.
I mean, I honestly think, you know, last week we did a hand where we were saying like, oh, the player who makes the big play on Stephen Chidwick, Andrew Wu, like he doesn't even need to know what his cards are or what Chidwick's cards are based on the way this hand is played out. Chidwick can never call a raise, essentially, right, against Wu, unless Wu's got an insane image.
Right.
It's just like, it doesn't matter. Like, Chidwick never has any of the kinds of hands that he can call with.
Yeah.
Like, and that's that. This feels like that a little bit, you know, where it's like, I can't come up with a hand that Walton can have that we could ever call against.
I mean, it's Queen Jack, Jack 10, and Queen 10 of spades, which did not bet the turn.
Check called the turn.
Yeah. Which, so...
Three combos.
And, of course, they're usually going to bet the turn.
It's three combos, too. And we're putting in 12 to win 34. So that means we're saying there's only nine combos of value and three combos of bluff for this to be even... That actually isn't a good enough price, but it's close.
Yeah.
So we're saying 25% of this guy's range is those three combos of spades. I just don't believe it for a damn second. I don't know. I think it's probably 0% of his range. But even when I give him all three combos, he has more value than this, doesn't he? He has one combo of quad sevens. He has three combos of kings. He has three combos of nines that he can play like this.
If Maceris knew that Walton was capable of check-raising ace-king, add quite a few more combos.
Oh, my God. Exactly.
That's now, 12 more combos.
Ace-seven suited, perhaps. There's only one combo of that, though, from Maceris' point of view.
But I guess still, there's only eight combos of ace-king from Maceris' point of view.
Okay, but guess what?
Aces. So there's three more combos there.
Yeah, I guess if we think ace-king can be there, then obviously aces can be there. I mean, what in the world?
I don't know. I can't find anything. Maybe some of our loyal listeners who know things about poker can tell us why you would call here, but I can't see it. I mean, we didn't even get into Maceris' distribution, which clearly this falls pretty low on.
We don't block. I mean, we block 6-8, which doesn't matter.
6-8 doesn't exist. Walton never opened 6-8 under the gun.
In this spot?
Yeah.
Never, right?
Yeah.
As far as we know, never.
Yeah. It's a meaningless blocker.
Right. And I guess the 8 also blocks 8-7.
A 3-bet would be a much better play than a call.
Oh. But that also seems suicidal, quite frankly, when he goes check. Check call, check raise.
It's got to be...
Feels like pocket kings to me.
It's got to be a higher EV than calling. It's got to be. Well,
everything is a higher EV than calling. I mean, calling your mother is a better EV than calling this bet, right?
Yeah.
There's no... Setting your bank account on fire is a better EV than calling. This is as low an EV call as you can make, I think.
How do you do that logistically? Set your bank account on fire?
You're always getting caught up in the semantics. Antler guts, bank accounts, can't set on fire.
I'm actually curious. Oh. I thought you knew.
Well, what you do is, first of all, you go to the bank.
Uh-huh.
And you ask to see your bank account, right? And they are confused. Uh-huh. But then when you keep talking, eventually they hook you up with one of those private side offices with a banker, right? And they flip their computer screen around so you can see it, and you can see your whole thing, all the ledger of your bank statements.
Uh-huh. Just like you could do on your phone.
Yeah. But now, see, this is the computer where it lives.
Ah,
right?
Okay.
And now you just fucking torch it.
Right.
You torch the place.
And then the bank account disappears.
It's on fire.
probably because you had to pay a lot of
damages. I don't know if it disappears. I mean, just because you burn something doesn't make it go away.
Conservation of mass. Wow.
You're welcome.
You just blew my mind.
Everybody learns something every time.
Yeah, okay. So to answer your earlier question, yeah, this is among the worst calls we've seen.
What's a worst play that you can remember off the top of your head? Because I'm currently running a blank, but it's been a long time.
The guy against Gail Bauman in the EPT, I don't even remember what he did.
Queens.
Yeah.
That was better than this.
Was it?
It was bad as hell, to be clear, but it was better than this. He had pocket queens, at least. He could beat bluffs. Guess who can't beat a bluff?
I mean, he can beat queen, jack, jack 10, and...
Which never exist. Or never here.
It's very hard to justify this call.
Yeah.
Unless it's misreported.
Again, I'm looking at the video right now of it. It's not misreported. It's right here. Unless the card readers are wrong, which seem unlikely for the World Series main event. And Maceras hasn't come out and said, why did they say that? That was not my hand. I look like a fool. It isn't saying
anything. I mean, you can chalk it up to fatigue, I guess.
It is. I think it's late in the day because there's 10 left, right? And maybe he thinks he has ace nine?
Maybe.
Look, if he thinks he has ace nine with the nine of hearts, we still have to be able to beat a bluff, though. So we can beat the nut flush draw.
Yeah, now we can beat all the nut flush draws. That helps.
I mean, it's better than zero hands, which essentially is what we had before. Still feels like the nut flush draw mostly bets the turn, but...
It does.
Maybe once in a while, ace, queen of spades, like, checks the turn and calls because it's like I'm beating, you know... I'm in game theory disaster mode here, man. I'm just going
to
check call.
I think what happened here, and I'm not going to... speak to this exact hand, but overall, because Maceras was chip leader for a long time and he was using those chips quite effectively.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of a tough line to walk for a long, long time, to keep being that guy who's just like bullying everybody and keeping everybody in line and trying to maintain the chip lead so that you can be the guy who accumulates chips while people wait to ladder up. And I think that probably just plus fatigue over time got to him. And ended up with him just kind of like blowing a gasket and making mistakes like this because he had a pretty precipitous fall, right? He ended up getting sixth or seventh or
I think, yeah,
something like that.
Maybe even eighth. It was, it's possible he just was, it's been what, 7 days of this? Eight days of this at this point, right?
This is day nine, I think.
No, this is day eight. It's the end of day eight, I'm looking. But essentially like seven straight days of playing poker all day and maybe just got brain foggy. I mean, we've all had it happen. Maybe not in this spot, but like I certainly have. I on day two of a big event, of a World Series event, I have gone all in with seven high pre-flop without realizing that under the gun raise and under the gun one had already moved in. You know, I thought I had fold equity against the big blind I thought it folded to me in the small blind. I did that. That was a long time ago. I did do that once.
Right. So people make mistakes.
Right. So maybe he thought he had ace nine or some other hand.
And that fatigue is amplified in a way that you and I don't understand because he's been on the feature table of the main event for a long time. That must add to the fatigue.
It doesn't have to, but I think it does.
I think
for most people
it does.
And if you're not used to being there, right? I'm sure Ike Haxton doesn't care, right?
Right, right. But if you're not used to being on the poker TV set with the whole poker world watching, you know, that's got to add to it a little bit.
I mean, you don't want to look stupid. You don't want to be made to look stupid.
And there's probably tremendous pressure with being the chip leader who's decided you're going to be the guy who bullies people, even and if you've not really been that guy before, you know?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, it's all about how he does it, right? It's like his own individual way of living.
But ultimately, this call has to be a mistake. I can't see a way to justify
it. There's no reason to make this call. I wonder how quickly he makes this call. I'm going to try.
It says he about 2 minutes.
It doesn't take that long. It's weird that he doesn't like think. I mean, you think if you're going to make this call in this spot, you might take 15 minutes to think about this.
Yeah,
because it's so hard to come up with a hand you can beat. I see him like thinking right now as I'm watching this video, and it's just like. It's really weird. I'm surprised Walton was able to raise, but maybe he just knew his customer.
Maybe. And I actually kind of get it. Up until the river, I do really think Maceras did a great job repping King Queen.
Right. It just is King Queen has to call the raise.
I know.
If King Queen is always folding, this is a terrible raise. That's all.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, obviously King Queen is not folding since Ace 8 called.
Right.
So everything's calling, and this is brilliant.
And so Maceras got sixth or seventh or something, and Walton got third.
Walton got third. He went out in the pocket eights hand.
Yeah, which it's probably not worth a full breakdown, but we might do some sort of video about it at some point.
Yeah, didn't we already do something?
Nope.
Really?
Nope, we did not.
Amazing. Yeah, one day.
One day.
Mm-hmm. Hey. First time, no rehearsal. I say fuck second take. 90s baby scratching them vinyls until the record break. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second dates. I'm the rapper most likely to make it.